Jerry this afternoon.
Here, let's come over here.
It's my job.
We are just so the committee can stay apprised. We are the parties involved in looking at our agenda on House Bill 2465 are working on some efforts to agree to amendments. So I have agreed to not want to waste the committee's time and a lot of discussion and testimony about that bill if, in fact, there can be some compromise. So with that, I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2465, or excuse me, a public hearing on House Bill 2465. And I'm now going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2465. Having tapped the bill in, we're going to hope that they can come up with some agreed-to amendments, and we won't take the committee's time sort of fleshing the whole thing out in front of us. Similarly, House Bill 2523, which relates to JP Courts in Schutz County, has been put off until next Wednesday. Is that right, Council, until the 26th? Again, at the request of the bill sponsor, because of the unavailability of some witnesses today who will be able to be here with us on the 26th. So that takes care of the first two items of business on our agenda today. So we're now going to move into a work session on House Bill 2049, and I'll open that work session and ask Council to reacquaint us with the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. If you remember, House Bill 2049 deals with requiring an amendment to add a claim for punitive damages, to require that amendment be made 60 days prior to trial by motion. We have in front of us dash four amendments, which are the applicable amendments we're going to be working with today. Essentially, the amendments add, you'll see on page one in subsection three, they add, there was already a provision to modify the time periods for cause. There's a specific provision at the end of subsection three that states that good cause is shown when a case is subject to mandatory arbitration and the trial date gets set. I hear a lot of shuffling. Do we not have the dash fours?
No, we do.
Okay. When a trial date gets set in a time period that's shorter than 60 days, there was some concern that the language as written by accepting arbitration but not other situations was by implication saying that those other types of procedural situations would not be included in a good cause. That is not the intention, and we had we got up to dash four amendments by haggling over some language such that the language now reads essentially including but not limited to the arbitration situation, meaning that we are specifically exempting arbitration here because it was brought to our attention that that might present a problem, but that does not mean that the legislative intent is to exclude other procedural situations where trial might be set in a period shorter than 60 days. Those situations should also constitute good cause when they arise, if and when they do arise. And there are other situations that I'm sure the committee cannot contemplate that would constitute good cause. And as long as movement shows good cause via motion, then the judge has discretion to modify those time periods. So we should be good to go with the dash four amendments.
Are there questions about the dash four specifically? Does the description bring everybody's recollection to the bill? Mm-hmm. Any discussion? I know I thought that Representative Ackerman, I remember you had quite a bit of early discussion on the timing on this. Is that right?
Only to conform it to the 60-day period on motion for summary judgment.
Right. Okay, that was the issue. Yeah,
that's right. That's okay. Already been done.
All right. Anybody else on the dash fours? Is there anybody?
Sure.
Yeah.
No, I was just going to
check and see. Is there anybody here that's following this bill that has any comments that they want to make to the committee on the dash four amendments?
Mr. Chairman, I've gotten the sign-off of the trial lawyers and the defense lawyers, and I believe the court has no issue with this either. So.
Really? The court has no issue? It's amazing.
Brags
okay.
Up and
okay. Representative Shetterly.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash four amendments into House Bill 2049.
Representative Shetterly moves the dash four amendments to House Bill 2049. Is there any discussion on this motion? Any objection? The amendments are in. Representative
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2049 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Shetterly moves House Bill 2049 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion on that motion? Hearing none, Nancy.
Ackerman.
Aye.
Anderson.
Aye.
Barker.
Excused.
Benson.
Here. Yes.
Hummel.
Aye.
McPherson.
Aye.
Matthews.
Aye.
Shetterly.
Aye.
Chair Williams.
Aye. House Bill 2049 as amended moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
I'll take it.
You want to take it, Representative Ackerman? Okay, that'd be great. Okay, we'll move on then to a work session on House Bill 2061. And when you're ready, Kevin.
Yeah, sorry. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. House Bill 2061, if you may recall, amends Oregon law to create an exemption for certain judgment debts that may be exempt when two members of a household are judgment debtors. There was a technical situation where it appeared that they might be entitled to a double exemption. That wasn't the intent of the law. If you remember last time we heard this bill back on the 22nd of January, Representative Shetterly brought up a situation where, and I believe, Chairman, that you had this concern as well, that sums recovered by married persons under crime victims under the Crime Victims Recovery Program might be subject to this this amendment, and it was requested that we get an amendment to exempt such sums. It's my understanding that that's what the Dash 1 amendments do, and that the bill is ready to go with the Dash 1 amendments and will no longer subject crime victims. But maybe Susan can tell me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, mostly.
Do we have someone who's going to come forward? Okay.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. I'm Linda Johansson from Preston Gates and Ellis. I'd like to testify on behalf of the debtor-creditor section of the Oregon State Bar about House Bill 2061. What this bill is attempting to do is fix some inadvertent renumbering of ORS 20.160 that has occurred over the last decade, and changes have not been made to subsection 3 to when changes were made to subsection 1, and subsection 3 allows joint debtors to double certain of their exemptions. So what we are attempting to do is to fix the renumbering problem with this bill.
And Linda, it's good to see you again.
See you again.
Yeah. This must be the session where all my old law school friends are coming back coming back to the legislature. So it is nice to see you, Linda. The concerns, do you understand the concerns that were expressed originally to the bill?
I guess I've been working with Representative Shetterly and some others on fixing this. One of the things that, in looking at how this worked, some changes that were made, I believe, in the 2001 legislative session allowed joint debtors to double a personal bodily injury exemption. However, that is personal to the person, so we decided that shouldn't be doubled. The crime victim reparation exemption is unlimited in dollar amount, so doubling that doesn't really make any sense. And then the amount that debtors are allowed to exempt for future income related to a personal bodily injury can be exempted, but only to the extent reasonably necessary for the support of the debtor and their family. So that really isn't subject to doubling. What happened in the bill changes over the years is that the doubling exemption for what the people in the practice called the wild card exemption got dropped out. It's a $400 exemption that can go for anything that they choose. It's usually used for exempting monies in a bank account. And so that was the exemption that should be doubled, and the other ones should not, in the opinion of the debtor-creditor section.
Okay. And the Dash 1 amendments then address those issues, right?
Yes.
Okay. Representative Shetterly, since you were the one to raise this issue, do you want to talk a little bit about this?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, if you recall, this was the bill, I think, where, first of all, we all had trouble figuring out what on earth was new.
Right.
Because I think the only thing in bold was an asterisk. And then there was some deleting of asterisks. And it was apparent that as we got through that this doubling up of some of these exemptions just didn't make sense in terms of what the exemptions represented. And it was unclear as to whether they would, the situation was limited to where the judgment was against joint owners or husband and wife, for instance.
Right.
And I met, we met down in Legislative Council's office. Mark Comstock from the debtor-creditor section was there. Who else? There was...
Dave, and I can't remember.
Yeah, there were the group of the stakeholders. And the Dash 1 amendments reflect, I think, what everybody who's smart about this figured out really accomplishes what the bill is intended to do without having to go back in and just redo the whole statute, which someday may need to be done.
Right.
But this does it for now.
Okay. Are there questions for Ms. Johansson or for Representative Shetterly on the subject?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Crummell.
So do the asterisks stay, or do they, or are they taken out?
Mr. Chair, nothing in, the only thing that changes is on line 2 of the bill.
Right.
Where,
on page 2.
We're deleting... lines, well, it's basically that subsection 3 that's between lines 22 and 25, and inserting this, and then the asterisks that are bracketed on page 4, lines 3, 4, and 5, and 7 will come out. The new asterisk that appears on line 11 will go in. That doesn't change, but the amendments to sub 3 that are proposed by the Dash 1 amendments just make those work better.
Okay. Works for me.
Okay, good. Good, good. And if, again, this is a little bit like HIPAA. If you ask more questions, we're going to make Representative Shetterly talk longer. So,
Mr. Chair,
Representative,
I'll be a yes vote on this bill. I think it is important that we just move along.
So Representative Shetterly moves the adoption of the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2061. Is there any discussion? Any objection? The bill is amended.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Shetterly.
Thank you.
I move House Bill 2061 as amended to the floor with a due pass.
Representative Shetterly moves House Bill 2061 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion on that motion? Hearing none. Nancy.
Hesterman.
Aye.
Anderson.
Aye.
Barker.
Aye.
Aye.
Crummell.
Aye.
McPherson.
Aye.
Demasi.
Aye.
Shetterly.
Aye.
Aye. House Bill 2061, as amended, moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And I think, Representative Shetterly, you ought to probably carry this one.
I guess I deserve it.
Asterisks and all.
Yeah. Asterisks and all. Yeah, that's exactly right. Okay, we're going to move now to a work session. Thank you, Linda, for coming down. We're going to move to a work session on House Bill 2063. Council.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. House Bill 2063 seeks to replace the 1962 version of the UPIA, which is the Uniform Principal and Income Act, with the 1997 version. And I only got the amendments about 10 minutes ago, so I really have no idea what they do.
All right. Well,
that's why we have Susan here
and Chris Klein.
Chris.
Come on forward, Chris. It's good to know that as we are in the 21st century, we're updating our act to the 1997 version.
Right.
I noticed that.
Yeah. That's progress.
Chair Williams and members of the committee, the amendment that you have before you actually were some amendments that should have been in the proposal that went to you the first time due to oversight on our part. Unfortunately, they didn't get inserted. And so the amendments were, to a large extent, things that we had already discussed at the last meeting and that I thought were in the bill that you saw. if you like, I can give you a little bit of a background again on this one, since I probably didn't manage to confuse enough of you the first time.
Can you give us a couple of minute refresher, Chris?
You bet. The Principal and Income Act defines what is principal and what is income for purposes of trust agreements. Often you will have a beneficiary who's entitled to income for that beneficiary's life, with the remainder interest in the trust after that person has died to somebody else. If the trust says you're supposed to get income, you have to decide what income means, and that's what this act does. It defines for you what is income and what is not. And if it's not income, it's principal. And again, this is important for purposes of distributions from trusts. It also comes into play in certain other contexts, institutional trusts, for example. But it's primarily in the private sector where this is important. This act seeks to update those definitions, and it also, perhaps the biggest feature of the new act, new from 97 at least, is to allow trustees some flexibility in deciding what is income and what is principal in order to take into account changes in investment patterns that have taken place over the last 10 years or so. So that's the short version. The changes that you see before you, there's only really one substantive change, and that is the addition of a Section 4B. This allows you to go into court with a trust that says pay all income to a beneficiary and then convert that trust to what's called a uni trust. That term simply means a trust that pays a percentage of trust assets each year rather than income. By converting, you get away from having to emphasize a choice of bonds over stocks, for example, simply because one investment generates more income, and simply allow a beneficiary to receive a percentage of the total assets. By doing that, you can then focus on the total growth of the portfolio rather than investing for one type of return versus another. Does that kind of have I gone too fast, or does that sort of make sense?
No, I think okay. we're following you.
The benefits of this are, again, not only that you can invest for total return, but also it puts us in line with recent changes to the federal income tax law that allows the creation of these entities. So by adopting this additional change, we're availing ourselves of some benefits under the tax code.
Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Representative McPherson.
I think this is probably is a non-substantive change, but I would note that my notes on the last hearing reflect the fact that the State Court Administrator questioned whether there was created by Section 4A, sub 4,
right,
a declaratory judgment procedure, and I see that there's a cross-reference now in the dash two amendments to the statute on instructions that the court is already by statute. It's a procedure that's created, so I gather that was in response to
these,
the concern.
Right. This amendment adopts changes from Bruce Miller of the State Court Administrator's Office. There is, however, one change in a discussion that I had with Rita Cobb that did not make it here, only because she only called me yesterday late. And so I'd like to discuss that one additional change. Section 4A currently says that the court shall make a determination that an allocation to income is either appropriate or inappropriate if the court makes certain findings. Judge Cobb, the pro tem judge in Washington County, requested that we change that from shall to a may, because it was her view that saying shall would require her to have findings every time this issue came up, and therefore it would increase the fiscal impact, that this bill would have a fiscal impact. And I agreed with her that the change from shall to may is appropriate. So
can you show us where in 4A?
I don't. All I have is the amendment in front of me, so I don't have the original bill in front of me. It's Section 4A, and hang on one second. Thank you.
it's on page 5-1.
Yeah, correct. Shall determine.
Is that that's the shall?
Yeah. That is the shall. And that would turn to a may determine.
Well, and actually, under on line 9 of the amendment, it's not determined. It's determined being deleted, and it's instruct the fiduciary on. So it would be, I assume, that we would be deleting shall determine and inserting may instruct the fiduciary on.
Correct.
Okay. Any other questions for Mr. Klein? Yeah, I mean, there's two ways to handle this, colleagues. We can attempt to do a conceptual and just make that change and adopt it by committee, or we can just try to pick that up, that change up on the Senate side. Representative Shetterly?
It seems pretty straightforward, Mr. Chair. I think what we could do and would be to, on line 9 of the dash 2s, where it says delete, just say shall determine, and then insert may instruct. I think that we could conceptually amend the dash 2s and accomplish that right there in the dash 2s, and then move the dash 2s as conceptually amended into the bill.
All right. Let's do that now, then. We will... the chair moves for unanimous consent that the rules be suspended to make a conceptual amendment to the dash 2 amendments to House Bill 2063. Is there any objection to the motion to suspend the rules? Seeing none, the rules are suspended. Representative Shetterly.
Chair, I would move that we conceptually amend the dash 2 amendments on line 9 by inserting, after the word delete, the word shall, and then inserting after the word insert, may. I'm sorry.
Within.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. No. I'm sorry. Following the word delete, insert may.
Oh, you had it right.
No. I did. Yeah, shall. That's right.
Mm-hmm. That's shall.
Shall. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Shall determine, within quotes, is stricken, and insert, within quotes, may instruct the fiduciary
right.
on.
Right. Correct. That's it.
So that's the amendment. Is there any objection to Representative Shetterly's conceptual amendment to the dash 2s to House Bill 2063? Seeing none, they are amended.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Shetterly.
Move the dash 2 amendments as conceptually amended into House Bill 2063.
Representative Shetterly moves the dash 2 amendments as conceptually amended into House Bill 2063. Is there any objection to the amendment? Any discussion? The amendments are adopted into the bill.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Shetterly.
Move House Bill 2063 as amended to the floor of the due pass recommendation.
Representative Krasanski.
I think we need to put the may into or A, don't we, on page 5?
We did that.
We did. That was in the conceptual amendment. We did both.
Yeah, we did both. Okay, so the motion is to move 2063 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Further discussion. Nancy, do you want to call?
Aye.
Anderson?
Aye.
Parker?
Aye.
Jensen?
Aye.
Trumbull?
Aye.
Pearson?
Aye.
Zemanski?
Aye.
Shetterly?
Aye.
Chair Williams?
Aye. House Bill 2063 is amended and moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation. There is nothing, colleagues, more exciting than the Uniform Principal and Income Act to talk about on the floor of the House, and I am looking for the volunteer.
Mr. Trust.
Yeah.
Representative McPherson.
Opened my mouth for a long time. Well, colleagues, it may be a bad assignment. You may find this one going down the floor once again. Just on my record on these kinds of technical.
No, that's all right. Representative Barker voted aye. So he's our canary in the birdcage on these things.
What's the relating clause?
We're going to open now a work session on House Bill 2340. Council.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, House Bill 2340 is the transfer bill which transfers responsibility for the Child Support Program from the Department of Human Services to the Department of Justice. It's my understanding that we have dash 1 amendments in front of us that are the final technical language tweaks that have been agreed between the attorneys from DOJ and DHS, and that the bill is ready to move forward with the dash 1 amendments.
So we have the dash one amendments, colleagues, that are, in fact, as I had reviewed them as well, that it's really, for the most part, tweaking language to finalize this transfer of responsibility. We've had some interim hearings on this. We've had some hearings in front of the committee. Ms. Schenkel is here if we need any more inquiry. You'll recall that when this bill was up the last time, there was a fair amount of testimony and opposition from the Oregon Men's Association. Going to get the name wrong, but Men's Association. Mr. Barlow, and we assume that you're listening today, Lane, and wherever you are. I did get an email from a copy of an email from Mr. Barlow that indicated that he's been working in cooperation with DCS, and I think they're working on some information. And the word I believe that I got from this email was that they were generally okay with the bill moving forward, that they felt like they were getting some movement with the Division of Child Support on some of the issues they had concerns about. So that's where the bill stands. The chair would move the dash one amendments to House Bill 2340. Any discussion on the amendment? Any objection? Then they're adopted, and the chair would move House Bill 2340 as amended to the floor with a two-pass recommendation. Any discussion? Go ahead, Nancy.
Ackerman.
Aye.
Anderson.
Aye.
Parker.
Aye.
Jensen.
Aye.
Trumbull.
Aye.
McPherson.
Aye.
Kazansky.
Aye.
Shetterly.
Aye.
Chair Williams.
Aye. House Bill 2340, as amended, moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and I'll go ahead and carry that bill on the floor. Colleagues, our last order of business today, and I want to congratulate you after yesterday's meeting on what I consider to be a model of efficiency this afternoon in the Judiciary Committee.
We do that tomorrow?
Yeah, right. No meeting tomorrow, by the way. Yeah, we don't have hearings tomorrow. But we do have a committee meeting on Monday evening, that's the plan. Our last order of business is, with a special dispensation from the Speaker's office, we haven't adjourned yet, so I'm going to move the introduction of LC 3491. The title being Relating to Non-Subject Workers Under Workers' Compensation Statutes. That's in front of you right now, and with all the standard caveats and exemptions that apply to introductions of LCs, so the chair would move its introduction. Is there any objection by any of the members of the committee? Seeing none, the bill is introduced as a committee bill, and we are adjourned for the afternoon.
I am going